living in the land.
In the first part of this hour, we spoke about the end of the world as a cultural phenomenon, but what if you really believe the end is near? What impact does that have on how you live your life and even who you might vote for? Those are just some of the themes explored in a documentary called Waiting for Armageddon, and we're joined now by two of the project's filmmakers, David Heilbrunner and Kate Davis. The film opens at Cinema Village on January 8th. We're also joined by Michelle Goldberg, author of the book Kingdom Coming, The Rise of Christian Nationalism. I'm very pleased to welcome all of them to our show today. Hello.
Hi, thanks
Hello,
for having
thank
us.
You.
And David and Kate, what exactly do the people you interviewed for this documentary think is going to happen at the time of rapture, and how soon do they expect rapture to occur?
Well, it depends who you talk to, but some of them are expecting it tomorrow. Some will tell you, the vast majority will tell you, they just don't know. It's God's timetable. What's going to happen? They have a pretty clear idea of what's going to happen. First will come the rapture. Jesus appears in the clouds, and he sucks all the believing Christians up out of their clothes, and they join him in the clouds and look down upon the earth, which then goes through 7 years of tribulation.
With floods, the people who are left behind.
With the people who are left behind. And that would be, I probably fit the profile of someone who's going to be left behind. And I will be, along with my brethren, you know, there'll be floods, hurricanes, earthquakes, tornadoes, eventually leading to a worldwide battle of Armageddon.
Michelle, do we know around how many people in the United States believe this will happen?
You know, it's difficult to say because there's certainly, you know, large numbers of people will say that they believe, you know, something around 40% will say that they believe that the world is going to end at a final battle of Armageddon. Whether that
but
means...
But 40% of the 300 million people in America, that's a lot of people.
But whether they actually believe the details of this theology is doubtful. We do know that a majority of... This theology is called, it goes by the snappy name of premillennial dispensationalism. That's the major strain within American evangelical Christianity. It's the kind of a dominant ideology on the American right. And people who... The Christian right comprises, you know, comprises maybe a core of about 16% of the population and a nucleus around that that's maybe more like 25%.
And so there's a political component to this?
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, can you believe in the rapture and be a liberal?
You can, but somehow it rarely works that way for a couple of different reasons. I mean, part of it is because so much of the rapture theology is really a kind of elaborated revenge fantasy against liberals and against against secularists who don't take them seriously. Like in so much of this literature, people like me eventually fall to their knees before the good Christians and repent of our disbelief and of our kind of contemptuousness.
But we are post-millennial now, aren't we?
Well, I think that there was an upsurge of this around 2000. But you know, one of the things about end times theories is that new signs of the last days are always in the offing.
Okay, a number of the people you spoke to in your film thought that the end is imminent, and you spoke to them a few years back, didn't you?
Yes.
I don't know when you filmed the interviews with the young woman who was so sad that she wouldn't be able to get married. She was sure it was going to happen very soon. She wasn't going to get married. She wasn't going to ever have children or grandchildren.
That's right. And even her daughter said she just hopes, though she believes in the rapture and Armageddon and the prophetic model of the world, she hopes that this all will happen after her 16th birthday. However,
so far, so good.
So far, so good. My sense is that, you know, ironically, you know, that a lot of these people live very much in the present. So at any one, you know, point in any one year, we can all feel pain and strife and stress that we can attribute to a sense that the end may be near.
Well, watching the film, I found myself wondering what these individuals' day-to-day life experiences are like when they know that the end is near.
Well, you know, that's one of the reasons we made the film, is because evangelicals are a subject of tremendous parody, especially here, you know, on the Upper West Side of New York, where we happen to live. And we wanted to really go out in the country and listen to these people and see who they are. And we were really struck by their day-to-day experiences, which are, these are tremendously rational, educated, organized folks.
A few of them were working in major scientific programs.
There was a couple who were literal rocket scientists from Connecticut. And they, in the middle of our conversation, said, yes, during this interview, we could be raptured, even before we're done talking to you.
But I'm thinking about that 16-year-old girl who was frightened that she wouldn't get married, have children, learn to drive a car. That has to be psychologically scarring on some level.
It might be, but on the other hand, there's tremendous comfort in knowing how things are going to turn out.
And so they're excited that the end of the world, as we know it, is nigh?
Well, right. One part of the scenario that we haven't mentioned is that a perfect, new and perfect world is foretold in the Bible. And this is called the millennium, and that's a 1,000-year reign where, you know, it will be trouble-free. So that is the kind of payoff.
Michelle, do you know if many of these people are aware of the history of this kind of thinking? Because people were saying similar things around the year 1000. They've been saying things ever since. The record that we opened with by the Gospelaires, "We're Living in the Last Days," was recorded in the 50s.
No, I don't. I mean, whether or not there are students of history, I can't really say. But one of the ironies of this movement is that it claims to be it's a fundamentalist movement that claims to be making a very literalist reading of the Bible. But it's actually a somewhat eccentric reading of Daniel and of the book of Revelation. You know, there is nothing in the book of there's nothing concrete about the details of the rapture. And many of the things that they see as being, you know, the kind of narrative elements of the last days. And that this whole movement is actually only been in the United States since about the 1800s and only originated in Britain a couple of decades before that. So it's actually a very modern and kind of quirky reading of the Bible. It's hardly been, you know, kind of Orthodox Christianity since the days of Jesus.
And some of them seem to be intent on bringing about Armageddon.
Well, and I think that that's why you certainly get in the film a sense of almost salivating anticipation and glee. And again, that's where I said the kind of revenge fantasy comes in. You know, one guy talked about how much he's going to enjoy sitting up on heaven and watching this bloody final battle take place in which all the enemies of God are vanquished. And where this plays out in our politics, why you should care about this even if you don't believe that any of this is going to happen, is that there's a whole series of events kind of that are going to precipitate this related to events in the modern Middle East. The Jews are going to return to the state of Israel, the entire state of Israel, including, you know, the areas that are now the West Bank that they call Judea and Samaria. There's going to be a third world war in the Middle East, possibly precipitated by Iran. And so for them, a kind of third world war in the Middle East is, if you will, it's a feature, not a bug. It's not something to be avoided at all costs. It's rather a kind of a precondition for paradise. And so some of them are, you know, just kind of sitting back and watching, you know, watching the chaos come on with some satisfaction. And some of them are even, you know, willing to go, I think, a little bit further and try to push it along.
Okay, in addition to profiling three families, you also followed a Christian study tour group to the Middle East. What kinds of sites did they visit on their tour?
Oh, well, the film will take you to Megiddo, which is the Mount Megiddo, where the battle, according to many, will take place.
Well, that's the source of the word Armageddon?
That's right, that's right. And we also go to
the Dome of the Rock, which is going to be, that's really a central feature of this premillennial dispensationalist thinking. The Dome of the Rock, which is currently in Arab hands, Muslim hands, is going to be taken over by the Jews and turned into the Third Temple. And it has to be destroyed. And during this tour, one of the tour guides sits down and blithely tells us he sort of hoped that one of Saddam Hussein's missiles might get off target. And he said, you know, take care of the problem.
Well, one of the people who you feature in the film, John Hagee, who actually came up during the last presidential election because he endorsed John McCain, and John McCain then had to distance himself. He says that we are already living in World War III, doesn't he?
He does, and he's an immensely influential figure, not to be marginalized just because he has beliefs that you know, alienated even the likes of John McCain during the last election. Hagee thinks we're living in the Third World War, and he, I think, welcomes this. This is the message of the film, is that this belief, which is so widespread, held by so many millions, does not discourage war. It sees war as a precondition towards without which paradise cannot occur.
Though I would add that some of his evidence for this apocalyptic kind of happenings around us is in terrorism, these terroristic outbursts here and there. It doesn't mean that it's not going to get worse. It's going to get a lot
Michelle,
worse.
Is Christian tourism in the Middle East encouraged among evangelical preachers?
No, certainly not. I don't think there's been in the past, you know, there's been Jewish, you know, there's both Jewish and Muslim terrorism in Israel, obviously. And because the site, the Dome of the Rock and, you know, the site of the Second Temple is of such kind of key interest to both Jewish apocalypticism and Christian apocalypticism.
But there's Jewish apocalypticism?
Oh, certainly. I mean, there's certainly, you know, Jews who believe that we are going to, and you see one of them in the film, who believe that there will be, that the Second Temple will be rebuilt as the Third Temple. It will, you know, there will be a resumption of sacrifices, a resumption of kind of this prelapsarian kind of Jewish reign. And so there's been a number of Jewish terrorist attempts to blow up the Dome of the Rock in order to replace it with the Second Temple. And that would be so incredibly inflammatory. I mean, remember the Second Intifada started when Netanyahu just went and kind of...
I think it was Ariel Sharon.
Oh, God, of course it was. When Ariel Sharon just went and marched on the Dome of the Rock, the Temple Mount. And so I don't think that there's going to be any. So far, the danger right there has been these kind of radical Jewish groups, and in as much, but there's been Christian support for some of these radical Jewish groups, not so much in terms of violence, but in terms of both moral and economic support. One of the things that we don't see in the movie, but Gershom Gorenberg wrote about in his book, and Gershom Gorenberg is quoted in the film, is that at one point, because you're going to need a red heifer to be sacrificed at the rebuilt Third Temple, at one point there was a group of rabbis collaborating with some evangelical cattle ranchers to somehow breed a perfectly red heifer that would then, you know, again, hasten the millennium.
In talking to the people in your film, David, did you find that they were interested in some of the pop cultural phenomena? We were talking earlier about films like 2012, but also among the best-selling books in America, the Left Behind series.
Well, sure. The pop culture is dominated in large parts of the country by the Tim LaHaye series called the Left Behind series, which portrays life after the rapture and what happens to everybody else left behind. And it's usually battling the forces of the Antichrist, and it's bloody, and it's sort of, Tom Clancy with a big religious gloss on it. There's also a video game, speaking of pop culture, the Left Behind video game, which is seen briefly in the film. And this is part of the dialogue the mindset that a huge segment of America lives with. So it may not be the pop culture again you get on the Upper West Side, but it's rampant in the country.
Do we know of other religions that also have end of the world scenarios? I mean, we know that the Mayan calendar ends in 2012, but I doubt that there are too many Mayans who would say, well, that means the end of the world.
I think lots of religions have had end-of-the-world scenarios, many of which have died out, but if you read, you know, folklore and mythology from ages past, they're all cosmological stories of how the Earth began and how it's going to end. What makes this different is that they've crossed over from the spiritual realm into the very practical political realm, and that's really what the film is about. And in fact, Michelle's going to be a moderator at a panel we're doing at NYU, which I have to plug, on January 7th.
Actually, it's the Puck Building's Rudin Auditorium, right?
Correct.
At 295 Lafayette?
Yes, and NYU is sponsoring it along with the Foundation for Jewish Culture, and we're going to have a rabbi and an evangelical and a Unitarian and Michelle, who's probably knows more than all those folks put together. This is the kind of dialogue we want to have, where religion and politics meet, because I think that's a dangerous intersection.
Well, and I don't think there's any. I mean, obviously, there's plenty of apocalyptic and millennial scenarios in Islam. You know, particularly in Shiite Islam, there's the coming of the Mahdi, which, you know, although I don't know the details, has a lot in common with the Second Coming, at least in terms of its kind of sense of violent retribution, after which everything will be put right.
Mm-hmm. Well, it is interesting that in the case of some of these end of the world films, it really has to do with humans bringing it upon themselves because they have destroyed the environment. And in the religious ones, it has to do with humans bringing it upon themselves because they have acted in an evil way. It's almost Sodom and Gomorrah, to a larger extent. So this is all retribution for human sin.
It is in its spiritual underpinnings, but when you talk to a lot of evangelicals, it plays out almost in a mechanical way. It's interesting that the rapture is going to come when it comes. It's not triggered by human folly the earth is going to descend further and further into sin and iniquity, but it isn't that it hits a tipping point, as far as I'm aware. I don't really know how the two are connected, if they're connected by any trigger event at all.
Well, Jesus returns.
Yes, he returns and sets everything right, but he's as one of our characters says in the opening of the film, it's not going to be a happy time to see God. He's going to be angry. He's going to have a sword in his hand, and he's, as you said, it's retribution for all our sins.
Meanwhile, you can see the film Waiting for Armageddon. My great thanks to two of its three filmmakers, David Heilbrunner and Kate Davis. It opens at the Cinema Village on January 8th, and the day before there will be an interfaith roundtable discussion from 6:30 to 8 at the Puck Building's Rudin Auditorium. That's at 295 Lafayette Street, moderated by Michelle Goldberg, who is a contributing writer to Salon and the author of the book Kingdom Coming, The Rise of Christian Nationalism. My great thanks to all of you for talking with us today and near the end of the year.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so
much. Hopefully we'll all be here after the first.